You are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Dr. Thomas O'Brien, chiropractic physician from Chicago and a national expert on gluten. Good morning.
Good morning, Ann. How are you this morning?
I'm terrific. You held a gluten summit, and I don't know what that is, and I want to know why you did it and what it was about.
Yes. The gluten summit occurred a few months ago, and in January of 2013, I made a declaration that I'm done playing small. I'm done. You know, and I'd been out on the road for 10 years teaching physicians and doing general public talks. Anytime I'm in a city to give a lecture to physician groups, we always try to schedule a complimentary talk to the general public the day before or the day after. You know, and I've been doing that for 10 years. And I realized that I needed to reach a bigger audience. I needed everybody to hear this information so they can make decisions as to what they want to do about their health, because I was seeing too much suffering from people who didn't know. So I made a declaration, we're going to reach the world, and I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it. So I looked, and I found some experts in the world of internet communications, and I put together what became known as the Gluten Summit. And I traveled the world and interviewed the world's leaders on this topic of gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. I mean, if you have to have a test for celiac disease, it's called an endoscopy. They put a tube down your stomach, and they snip out a little piece of the intestines and look at it under a microscope. And the report from the gastroenterologist says March 1, March 2, March 3, depending on what level of deterioration there is. Well, I went to Oxford, England, and interviewed Marsh. I interviewed the godfather of all of this, and that's how I started the Gluten Summit. The first one was with Dr. Marsh, and it was just what a wonderful man he was. He gave us an entire day of his time at Oxford and answered all of our questions, and some of the things he said are shocking for doctors and the general public to hear. And then I interviewed Alessio Fasano, who is the chairman of pediatric gastroenterology at Mass General Hospital at Harvard.
And he's also a celebrated published author.
He has many
articles in literature.
Exactly. He was a wonderful expert to talk to, because he talked to us about how no human can digest gluten. Now, this is the chair of pediatric gastroenterology at Harvard. You know, it doesn't get better than this.
Right. It's not some slouch from whatever, the sticks.
Right, the College of DuPage or somewhere, right?
Cayman Islands.
Right. And I interviewed 29 of the world's leaders, and my interview skills were zero. I'd never done this before in my life, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I didn't say to them the way some interviews may go, well, doctor, tell us about your work. And then, you know, the guys kind of, well, I do this and this and this, and I mean, I had read their studies, because this is my world for the last 10 years. This is my world. I'd read their studies, and I say, Dr. Marsh, given that your study in 2002 in the Journal of Gastroenterology, you wrote dot, 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 does that mean yes? And so would that mean yes, that's correct? Do you hear that, people? What we have is Professor Michael Marsh, the godfather of diagnosis, telling you that dot, 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 dot. And Dr. Marsh would say, yes, that's correct. Or Dr. Fasano would say, yes, that's correct. So I asked the point questions, the bullet questions, so that our listeners could hear and understand in common everyday language what the problems may be with gluten and how it may manifest, how to identify it, and what to do about it. We had 118,000 people that attended the Gluten Summit online. I had a staff of 18 that put this together over the course of 8 months. We transcribed all of the interviews, so we had 635 pages of transcript if you do better reading than listening. We made slides, over 1,000 slides, that went along with the audio. So if you're watching it on your computer and listening to it on your computer, you can see the slides that go along with what they're saying.
Can people still have access to that?
They can. It's at theglutensummit.com.
Okay.
And this is something that I think is so valuable for people to listen to, and it's just under $3 per world leader. I mean, and each one is about an hour or a little bit more. You're listening to the best in the world.
Wait, how many are there?
Work. 29.
Oh, God.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, you listen to it over a month or 2 months. You listen to it when you're driving. Some people listen to a couple of them two or three times. I had 18,000 emails that came into us thanking us. I had a staff of eight that were just answering emails all day, every day. And they'd call me and say, well, what do I say about this? And what do I say about that? And but 18,000 people who were saying, thank you so much, thank you.
Wow.
It really was a game changer. And it was a way of delivering cutting-edge health information that had never been talked about before in this manner, talking to the experts, not the people like Dr. Fasano, who has a gift to write well and communicate well, but these egghead scientists, you know, who are back in their laboratories, and I'd ask them the questions, and they'd answer a little technical, and I'd say, does that mean yes? And would that then mean yes? And so people could understand.
Right, breaking it down so people would get it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm so very proud of it. It's just, and it changed, it was a game changer. So there are more health summits that are coming out now that are emulating what the Gluten Summit was, mm-hmm. and they're carrying their own message on thyroid or adrenal function or attention deficit, you know, on different topics, and they're using a similar format.
Do you think you might do it again?
Yes, we're doing a follow-up in April of next year.
Ooh, and so if people want to get in on it, how do they do that? If they want to hear
early
it.
Yet.
It's too early. Okay.
They'll hear about it on your show.
All right. Well, that's. I look forward to bringing it to them. So the purpose of the Gluten Summit was to bring information about what is really known and understood about gluten and gluten sensitivity and allergy to a broader audience, so that more
Correct.
People would know the dangers of continuing to eat gluten if they have a problem with it.
That is correct.
And what have you, aside from the thank yous, what have you noticed, or has anything, I mean, has there been a shift? Have you seen a shift, or is something happening?
Oh, my goodness, yes. There's a tremendous shift. Every lecture I go to now, anywhere in the world, actually, people walk up to me and thank me for the summit. Everywhere I go, and I'm not exaggerating, it's really overwhelming at times. People walk up to me and they start crying sometimes. You know, they didn't plan on that, but their daughter's MS is gone, or their child's seizures are gone. Thank you so much, Dr. O'Brien.
Whoa, so these aren't doctors, then these are patients, or just people?
Both. People, right.
Uh-huh, right. I mean, there are people that are affected by gluten that have made changes, that have had tremendous changes in their health.
Exactly.
Yeah. God.
And the world of non-celiac gluten sensitivity is now well established. Before the Gluten Summit, there was always some scuttlebutt out there and some questions, because there weren't many studies that had come out. They were beginning to come out, but there weren't many. Now the studies are outnumbering celiac disease studies 4-1. For every one study on celiac disease, there are four on non-celiac gluten sensitivity that now are being published.
So that means that the data is just going to keep piling up.
That's exactly right. More and more information is coming out all the time.
And is it across the United States and the world?
Yes. I did a European tour this last March, and I was in four countries and seven cities talking about this. And I started off in Dublin, and I said, okay, let's get started. Here we go. And my first slide was on the Gluten Summit. And I said, did anyone hear about the Gluten Summit? And half the room, over 80 people, it was about 150 people in the room, about half the room raised their hand, and my jaw dropped. I'm in Europe, and over half the room raised their hand. I said, wait a minute, just a minute. And I got my phone out, And I took a picture. Okay, raise your hands again. Raise your hands. And I took a picture, and I sent it to all my staff right then. And I said, look at what your work has done.
Wow.
All of the hard work, 8-hour days, 10-hour days, for weeks and weeks, 6 days a week, for weeks on end, answering 18,000 emails. Look.
And so, cool. Okay, so were these lay people, or were these, is this a room full of doctors?
This was a room full of nutritionists and doctors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So even at cool. the highest level, people were tuning in. So people were aware
marvelous.
Of you. That is cool. And so when you went to other countries, was it the same thing? Did people, yes. people had heard about
Sweden,
it?
Sweden.
Wow.
England.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Spain. Yes.
Wow. That's great. So are we the slowest country to get it?
Yes.
Are we the slowest in everything?
Yes. We're the most resistant. People don't like to hear this, but here's the facts.
Mm-hmm.
This is just the facts. You can't argue with it. The World Health Organization rates the United States number 2 from the bottom in quality of health care. We have the second worst infant mortality rate, the second worst childhood mortality rate of anywhere in the industrialized world, second from the bottom across all of the markers that they look at, and yet we spend more than any other country in the world on health care. Those are the facts.
That's terrible.
And people don't want to hear this because they don't know what to do, but we keep going through the medical system that just gives you a pill to try to hide the symptom, as opposed to dealing with the trigger. Now, you, of course, want to deal with the symptoms because you want to feel better, but you can't forget about the trigger, because when you forget about the trigger, it's going to come back to bite you somewhere else. And then 30 years later, 40 years later, you're diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So your headaches went away when you started taking Advil every day, and you think that's fine, as if you had an Advil deficiency. But the inflammation that was causing the headaches is reduced by the Advil, but the autoimmune mechanism that may have been underlining the headaches continues, and it continues to kill off your brain cells in this example, and 40 years later, you got Alzheimer's. And then we wonder, how did my dad ever get Alzheimer's? Wow, he really tried to eat well in life. How'd that ever happen? We keep our heads buried in the sand,
mm-hmm.
and we don't look for the triggers. And it really is, wake up, America, wake up. We've got the worst statistic possible. This is the first time in history of the human civilization, the last 8 years, it started 8 years ago and it's just continuing, the first time in history our children have a shorter projected lifespan than their parents. They're going to get sick and die younger than when you get sick and die. It's the healthcare system, and we just have our heads buried in the sand.
Well, I don't think it's only the healthcare system. I think it's also what we've done to the world and the way we eat and the way we don't exercise and watch TV and sit on the computer. And I mean, I think it's an amalgamation of the whole life.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right to all of that. And I throw that into the healthcare system, because if you don't have a way of evaluating your body correctly, you'll never identify what the triggers are, like the way you eat, or your mm-hmm. emotional outlook on life, or the environmental toxins, the mercury that's in all the tuna now. All tuna. Reports come back that all tuna now have high levels of mercury.
So I want to go back to this idea that Americans are resistant.
Yes.
This resistance is killing us.
Exactly right. You know, we'd rather keep our heads in the sand. We don't want to know. So I'd rather just eat my ice cream sundae and not look at how upset I am with my life. So instead of looking at and evaluating what I can do to change, to be a healthier or a stronger or a kinder or whatever the is that you would like to be more of, instead of looking at that, we'll eat our ding-dongs and ho-hos and forget about it. Or, you know, we'll just hide in our foods that just trigger blood sugar fluctuations, because it's hard work to get an accurate evaluation of how we are in life and how happy we are. You know, so many of us are spinning our wheels, And in healthcare, it's just another example of spinning your wheels. You don't want to know what's going on. You just want to get rid of feeling bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure there's anything wrong with that. You know, we want to deal with our symptoms, but unless you fell down and you got some trauma, if this came on out of the blue, it's been building up. So the question is, why is this building up?
Right. You know, well, I find that when people come to me and they say, you know, I ask them, you know, well, are you taking any medication? Do you have any health problems? First, when I ask if they have any health problems, they always say no. And then when I ask if they're taking any medications, then they start in the list. And there's such a disconnect. They don't even realize that they have something wrong.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
I say, why do you have high blood pressure? And they give me this, they give me this look of, what are you talking about? I say, well, did your doctor ever try to figure out or ask you, you know, or tell you why you have high blood pressure? No, they just gave me this medication. And I think, well, wouldn't you like to know why? And then we usually have a conversation about glycemic index and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And what
you're
what,
absolutely right. Yes. My friend, Dr. Mark Houston at Vanderbilt University has written a couple of books for the general public on where does high blood pressure come from? And he talks about all of the different mechanisms. And he said, ask your doctor these questions. And if he doesn't know the answer, ask him to find out. And if he's not willing to find out, find a new doctor.
So what are the questions?
Oh, the questions are, what type of high blood pressure do I have? Do I have heavy metal toxicity? Do I have any food sensitivities? I mean, it's very common if you have a gluten sensitivity, you go on a gluten-free diet and you just feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, let me get this turned off. I forgot to turn my phone off. There we go. So when you look at Dr. Houston's books and you read his books, they're on Amazon, and you say, oh my goodness, there's so much science behind addressing high blood pressure in a healthy, safe way that you eventually would be able to reduce the amount of your blood pressure medication. And for many people, they're able to get off their blood pressure medication following the advice of their doctor, being monitored by their doctor, but applying these principles of where's the high blood pressure coming from? Okay, that's where it's coming from. How do I address that? Okay, that's how I address it. And you start implementing it, and you start feeling better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that lowering blood pressure with dietary modifications is relatively simple.
Yes.
And in fact, a lot of times, people then start having problems with dizziness because you're over-medicated now.
Exactly.
And a lot of people don't realize, they go to the doctor and they say they're dizzy, and then they get another medication for dizziness.
Right, and what we tell all of our patients, you know, you're here with high blood pressure. Okay, what's going to happen at some point is you're probably going to start getting a little dizzy. And I want you to mm-hmm. be sensitive when this first happens, and you call your doctor right away and say, hi, I've started some new protocols, changed my diet, I'm exercising a little bit, and I'm getting a little dizzy, and I was warned that might happen. So it may be that I'm not needing as strong a dose of the medication for high blood pressure because my blood pressure is not as high anymore,
mm-hmm.
and the medication's making it too low, and I'm getting dizzy. Can you check me out and see if it's good to lower my amount of medication? So we teach our patients to get ready for this so it's no surprise for them.
That's great. That's great to empower the patient to, to take it in hand and go to the doctor with the possible solutions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's go back to gluten again and talk about the connection between Alzheimer's and the development of Alzheimer's and the gluten problem. I think that's a real stretch for a lot of people.
All degenerative diseases are diseases of inflammation in the body. If you fall down or you're in a car accident or something, that's not a degenerative disease. That's a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of diseases that come on over time, like diabetes or brain deterioration and dementia and Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or autoimmune diseases or skin diseases, the things that come on over time are degenerative. They all have inflammation at the cell level. The cell's on fire. The cell's on fire. So the question is, what's causing the fire? And studies came out in the, I think it was the late 80s, maybe early 90s. They showed that for those elders, they'd follow hundreds of elders for 15, 20 years, And those elders that were on anti-inflammatories, like aspirin or Advil, they had a lower incidence of Alzheimer's, measurably lower. Less of them would get Alzheimer's. And they said, oh, isn't that interesting? There must be an inflammation component to this disease. And there certainly is. So we don't advocate people being on aspirin or Advil long-term, unless your doctor recommends it, but we know that it's a very common cause of causing problems in the gut, so it's not a first choice to do that. But observationally, what they found out was less people had Alzheimer's when they reduced the inflammation. So the question is, what's causing the fire in the brain that kills off the cells, kills off the brain cells, that eventually manifests as Alzheimer's? And Newsweek had an article back in the late 80s or early 90s, I think it was, that was on Alzheimer's, and they said, even back then, scientists now know that Alzheimer's is a decades-long process. Nobody gets Alzheimer's in their 60s or 70s. You get the end stage in your 60s or 70s, but it starts in your 20s and 30s, killing off brain cells. So if you identify that your brain's on fire early in life, and then you put the fire out and you go back and retest and you see there's no more inflammation, you know that you're doing something good for you and likely going to reduce your risk of developing Alzheimer's. What they found in the journal Gastroenterology in 2007, they published a study that showed a couple of patients, that it's not hundreds, but they just noticed there were a couple of patients. They put them on a gluten-free diet, and they checked them out of the Alzheimer's facility. Their brain started working again. They went back to live with their families.
Oh, my.
They were functional again.
Wait. I haven't even heard of that. Nobody knows about reversing Alzheimer's?
Arresting Alzheimer's, yes. Okay. Yes. It's in the journal Gastroenterology. It's in my all-day seminars. You just have to go online and type in Alzheimer's and... let's see, what would the keyword be with that? Alzheimer's, inflammation, gluten.
Okay. If it's arrestable, you would think that everyone would be pretty interested in that. I mean, this is like an epidemic.
It's a huge epidemic. And just a week ago, I was at a large conference, an annual conference, and this man came up to me and, excuse me, do you have a moment? I said, yes, of course. He said, my name is so-and-so, and I am the director of neurodegenerative disease and it's a very famous university here in the U.S. And he said, you know, we're finding that we're achieving a startling amount of success in early to mid Alzheimer's, applying the principles of functional medicine. Now, I'm really not clear about this gluten component. I'm wondering if we could talk. I said, oh, my goodness, yes. So we've scheduled a time where we're going to spend a whole day together, and I'll bring them up to speed on how to look at this one component of a functional medicine approach to this devastating disease called Alzheimer's, because gluten is just a common source of gasoline being thrown on the fire. Mm-hmm. So stop throwing gasoline on the fire. You have an inflammatory disease? Stop throwing gasoline on the fire.
Right. Okay.
Well, what does that mean? And the answer is, well, I don't know, but let's do the test to find out.
So if someone is between 20 and 50 and they think, well, I have whatever I have, what is going to make them think, oh, maybe I should look at gluten or a gluten test? What are the things that make them say, oh God, maybe I'm at risk for getting Alzheimer's, or maybe my headache is going to lead to that? What? Tell me.
Okay, I'm not sure. Is your question about gluten sensitivity or about brain inflammation and brain deterioration?
I don't know. Let's do both. Good.
Okay. So in terms of, do I have a gluten sensitivity? It's really easy. It's the test we talked about on the last show. That it is the most accurate test that's out there. It's the only test that's accurate that's out there, and it's from CyrexLabs.com. Just do the test. And my position is everyone should consider doing the test because this is such a common problem out there. It's so very, very common. I call it a foundational problem.
So
it's a
what
foundation.
What percent of the population do you think has some kind of gluten problem?
40 to 60% of people who come to see a doctor, meaning they've got a health complaint, 40 to 60% of them will come back positive if you do the right test. Clinically, that's what we see.
Okay, so that's really enough to consider no matter what's wrong with you. Maybe there's some gluten component.
That's exactly right.
It's not some crackpot thing for companies like Glutino and Udi's to get rich. Although I'm sure they're doing fine. I mean, they make great products. I like their stuff.
Yes, and the demand for gluten-free foods keeps growing.
Right, exactly. Right. Okay, so what you're saying...
And then the second part of your question.
Right.
About the Alzheimer's thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It used to be that our researchers said, you don't want to test the genes for Alzheimer's because it just makes people crazy. But now our researchers are saying, if there are protocols that can help, then of course you might want to check to see if someone's at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So there are tests that can be done to see if you're at risk early in life. And the simple test, blood test that looks at different genes, called APOE, APO, capital letter E. And the possible results of the tests are 2, 3, and 4. They're genes APOE2, APOE3, APOE4. You get one from your mother, one from your father. And ideal is to be a 2-2. That's the very best. The average is a 3-3. And really, really bad is a 4-4. But you can be a 2-3, a 2-4, a 3-4, so any variation of those, because we get one from our mother and one from our father. So whatever they carried and they gave us is what we'll get. So the numbers in our culture today is that just for the average person out there, if you reach the age of 85, 50% of us will have Alzheimer's by the age of 85. That's how bad it is now. And that's just everyone across the board in the U.S. If you have 1-4, so you have an APOE2-4 or an APOE3-4, if you have 1-4, 90% of people who reach the age of 85 will have Alzheimer's. If you have 2-4s, so you're an APOE4-4, it's 90% of the people by the age of 65 that will have Alzheimer's.
Okay,
those are really scary statistics. Hang on, I've got to complete this. This is scary statistics, really scary. So why would you want to know that? Because it gives you a window of opportunity to learn what you don't currently know about living an anti-inflammatory lifestyle. Stop throwing gasoline on the fire. Whatever that means, stop throwing gasoline on the fire. So you have to learn, are there foods that I'm sensitive to that are inflammatory to my body?
Mm-hmm.
And there are markers that you can use because, see, those APOE2-3-4 statistics, and they're accurate statistics, but those are on people who kept eating ding-dongs and ho-hos their whole life.
Right.
They didn't change anything.
So people can have this APOE test, right?
Yes.
Anybody can
yes.
have it, so they could ask their
yes.
doctor for it.
Yes.
And then they could know if they're at risk or how
if
high the risk is. That's great.
If you're at risk, then you can look for markers of inflammation. And if you have markers of inflammation, it's a sobering day when those tell, oh, my gosh, all right, my brain's on fire right now. I feel fine, but the blood test says my brain's on fire. So if your brain's on fire, it's killing off brain cells. So you want to do whatever it takes to put the fire out.
Absolutely.
So that means finding a functional medicine practitioner, learning what foods work for you, what foods don't. What's realistic in terms of exercise for you. It means changing the lifestyle. It gives you a window of opportunity to change the lifestyle that likely is contributing to this fire.
Oh,
and
man.
Then in a year, you go back and check again. I've got many patients.
Wait, what do you check again? You're talking about the peptides.
You check for the markers of inflammation. And if the markers are down, good, the protocol's working.
Right. Okay, well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. My guest has been Dr. Thomas O'Brien. Thank you so much for speaking to us today.
Thank you, Anne. It's a really pleasure to be with you. I would just say, if people want more information, you can go to our website. It's It's www.thedr.com.